Welcome to the Two Regular Teachers podcast. My name is Rick Kayler Thompson.
My name's Adam Lavaz. Thanks for joining us for episode 62, and it's the episode after Rick's successful return from DigiCon, a Spark talk, an Edmodo talk, and I hear just the talk of the conference as a whole. Would that be right?
Yeah, a great conference, Adam. Yeah. And I know we reflected very briefly on it in the outro last week.
But yes.
I think it was Corey Barclay, who's been a guest on our podcast before, sent a tweet out in relation to the final keynote last week, where he said, Steve Brophy in his keynote said something about, after conferences, there's always the come down.
Mm.
And then it's like the dip, where you get back to reality a little bit and think, oh, you know, I've got all that stuff I've got to do. And it's about, he was using the term walk on, which is, look, if you're not sure, I'm not going to go all into it now, but it's related to a fantastic personal story he told about his brother. But walk on, meaning kind of, you know, bite the bullet and try something different and keep the dream alive. And you know, I had that dip, Adam.
Yeah, you did have it.
I did.
Because I know we didn't necessarily touch on it last week about that dip and stuff, but obviously in the days after that, you had that sort of that come down, where I know the DigiCon's almost like a little mini getaway for you. You go and stay up there for a couple of nights and sort of make a couple of days out of it. And like you said, coming back and you are back to that reality. Obviously, it took a few days for that to set in for you.
Yeah, it's not a horrible reality, but I guess the message I'm trying to get across, which people will understand if they saw the keynote, is that we do have a lot of other things we've got to do in the job, but there was a lot of great things shared at DigiCon, a lot of fantastic things happening in classrooms, and that sometimes it might just be one small thing that you try when you get back, and if you do that, then you're already walking on, so to speak. It is good to be back here, though, Adam. I did miss your presence, as I alluded to last week.
Thanks, mate. We did share a tear over Voxer a little bit. We got a bit emotional while you were there, and I just, you know, couldn't be there, and I had to, you know, compose myself. But that's okay.
Yeah. Well, that was your tear. I mean, it's nice to be back, but I wouldn't say
you're a cold-hearted, emotionless man. I think that's though. But I'm going to jump in there because I want to say that it was a good opportunity for you to get some guest speakers on last week, obviously, but also to have some of our regular listeners as well. And you know, we want to talk about that. And we did get an email recently, didn't we, Rick, that I know you wanted to mention as well?
I just wanted to give a shout out and a thanks to Anne DeManser, an assistant principal in Greater Victoria, who sent us a lovely email just before DigiCon, Adam, thanking us. Oh, she was saying thanks for being back because we had our hiatus.
Yep.
She listens to us on her walks and just shared a fantastic story about, which I'd like to share in our anecdote episode, Adam, if I may, which is we'll talk about later on in the episode.
We will.
About when that's coming up, but about her early teaching experiences in rural schools when she was younger. Just a wonderful blog post, which we won't share tonight, but we'll share at our anecdote episode. So look, Anne, thanks for contacting us. And hopefully you're listening right now.
Yeah, we do hope. So, mate, we've got three really good topics to get into tonight. So without further ado, as the French would say it, let's get to it. So, Rick, for our first topic tonight, I wanted to go down to the lower end of the school. And I know, obviously, our listeners would know over the last couple of years I've gone back to the 1-2 classroom after many years at the top end of the school in the 5-6 classroom. And I came across an article that was entitled The Kindergarten Shock. And it's from San Diego over in America. And as I've mentioned many times before, I love reading articles about schools across the world. It really keeps you up to date and seeing what we do well here and what people do differently. And it talked about how there were many kids who get to kindergarten who are already behind. And there's this idea that the article sort of talks to a lady who is a teacher, and she thought her son was going along beautifully and doing all the right things, and they wanted to go to private schools and do all these things, and he got to kindergarten and they found out that he was behind. And the basis of him being behind was he could read, but he couldn't do those extra things. He couldn't analyse the text, he couldn't talk about the text and do these things, and therefore was judged as being behind, even though he could read those words and do things fluently. And I guess the discussion point for me, and I want to throw it over to you, is that idea is, are we asking too much of the students, or is this the direction as teachers and as education as a whole should be going in?
When that young student got to kindergarten, I'm assuming that these days in the States there is some kind of curriculum or set of guidelines that have to be addressed, just like we do as teachers in kindergartens. I know in Australia, and I'm pretty sure, and people can clarify this for me, there is a kind of like a set curriculum for our kindergartens now. There's a certain amount of content they have to get through.
Yep.
So if that's the case in the States, then I think, I guess, then fair enough if this student hadn't quite got there. But if those parents, and I think you suggested it, and it, I think it does suggest it in the article, if the parents of that child were fully engaged with that child and giving them all the experiences that they required before kindergarten, reading to them, all those sorts of things, then they've done everything they can. And then maybe it's not such a massive alarm bell. It's just a little bit... It sounds harsh, doesn't it? Because this child, a child at 3 or 4 years old can already be called 6 months below the expected level or 12 months below. And it seems a bit harsh, but at the same time, is it good to know? Perhaps it's good to know that early so you can enter and help them at the point of need.
And that's a great point. But on the flip side of that, I'll play the devil's advocate there and say, should a 4 or 5 year old kid be expected to analyse and look deeper into a text and talk about it? I mean, are we asking too much of a young kid? I mean, they're 5 years old. I mean, you think about it, they get to kindergarten. A lot of parents aren't equipped to do some of those things with their kids. They just think that, you know, if I'm exposing them to text and literature and all these things, that should be enough. And then to kind of send them along and they can read and then they're told that they're 6 months behind. I can understand it. That'd be an absolute shock to the system. And then a teacher going, well, you know, they really should be able to do this and that. Well, when they first get to kindergarten and things, I don't think they should. I mean, that's something that should be taught across a few years. And then by the time they get through those few years, maybe that's where, no, well, I haven't got that still yet. That's when they're 6 months behind. I don't know. It's a real catch 22.
In terms of our system, I'd like to see what the expectations are for literacy levels preschool. I'd like to see, because I can't quite make comments right now on it. But I would say that a child entering kindergarten should have, and you mentioned this a little bit in that comment, you'd like to think they've got a love for reading or a bit of a passion and an ability to read at a certain level that seems appropriate for that age, and perhaps be able to maybe pick out characters, name a setting, that's the beach or something like that. I know what you mean. Saying analysing a text makes it sound so much more formal, doesn't it?
I really agree
with you that would be quite a difficult level to match. I think what we're forgetting here perhaps is this is something we talk about in primary schools a lot now, is the whole problem solving and play inquiry type thing. Now, I'm not saying you do an inquiry unit in kindergarten, but this whole aspect of figuring out a problem, whether it's something to do with building, with building blocks, or even how to access a piece of play equipment, that I know that's prevalent in kindergartens, but to me that must be one of the fundamental important things that you would hope your child is learning about doing at kinder.
Absolutely. But and that also comes back to the parents, isn't it? And making sure that around the house, and I can touch on this with Sienna. I mean, Sienna loves being read to already. She's only 15 months old. We have books everywhere, and my wife takes Sienna to the library quite regularly and does those things. She'll pick up a book and she'll sit on your knee and I'll read it to her and she'll look and she can lift up things and do that. And that's fantastic. And I think there is a little bit of that expectation on the parents that if you want them to be up to speed, then you need to put in that little bit of work. You need to foster that love of some of these things before they get there, isn't it? That's got to be on them.
So we know, don't we, that some families from lower socioeconomic backgrounds and perhaps less education levels have some kids come to kindergarten and then school a long way behind due to their family circumstance. So on that side of the argument, I think that in preschool times, they need to be exposed to a lot of this rigorous stuff to help catch them up. So there does have to be a bit of that, I think, for those kids that come who don't have that family support or that passionate parent support.
I agree. And to those parents, it wouldn't be a shock. Now, before we want to move on to our next topic, I do also want to bring up that a lot of parents, though, these days, and again, we've touched on this before, don't understand that there is more to reading than just barking those words. So that parent actually saying, well, I thought he could read, he's reading the words to me and stuff. A lot of parents don't get that it's not just being able to read the words, that as they get that little bit older and get into prep and grade one, they need to be able to talk about it too. Because how many kids do you get? And I know you probably still get it up in the 5-6s, and I know you got grade 3 this year. You still get those kids who, they read superbly. And then you'll go to them, so Johnny, can you tell me just what do you think happened in that story? Or why did a character do this? And they go, I don't know. I'm not really sure. Yeah. There's so much more to it than being able to just read fluently and have that vocab.
So that's where education comes in, though, isn't it?
Exactly.
So, and that's fine. If we can't expect parents to have all the teaching skills that you and I learn.
And that's right. And that comes back to, should we be then marking them 6 months behind? We can't be expecting parents to be able to teach them these skills before they get to school or in those first years, because they're not equipped to do that. That's our job. You know, to ask them and say, no, you're already behind. Well, that's not that kid's fault. They haven't had that opportunity to learn those skills as yet, you know?
I think our job is to help, yeah. Once we step in, you hope that they've got some sort of grounding and, you know, that they've had a go, you know, that they've... I guess they've got concepts of number, they've got some concepts of literacy. Mm. When I say concepts, I mean they can count. You know, they can count a few things, you know. Mm. All that basic stuff that you hope that they've got at prep level.
That's right.
But we know that a lot of them don't, but I think our job is to help guide that once they come. Yeah.
So, look, to our listeners, if you think in this day and age when the students are young, they're being pushed too far, or we're not pushing them enough, or we think it's enough, we'd love to hear from you, particularly some early school teachers who probably had those kids in prep, you know, coming in from kindergarten. We'd love to hear a little bit of feedback about what you think about the level they should be at and the role that the parents play in that before they get to primary school.
Well, Adam, a lot of viewers of ABC1, in not just in Victoria but across the country, will be familiar with the documentary program Revolution School, which aired last term, a couple of months back. And it was a camera crew, basically for those people who are listening who aren't sure, a camera crew spent a year at in Berwick at a school called Cambria College, I think I've pronounced that right, in Melbourne. And it was a school that was really struggling with its data was low, student engagement really low, teacher turnover was high. Mm. They got a new principal in, and over a period of 8 years, not just over the period of time that it was filmed, they've improved hugely. And their staff are passionate, kids are really excited, the data's gone up. And there was an article recently in The Age that talked about how enrolments, amazingly, have skyrocketed.
Ah, I'm not surprised.
Yes, and that the principal's been in talk with the department of putting in a zone. Now, I didn't watch the show, Adam. I had a couple of minor reasons why I didn't. One of them was purely that I just wanted to have some time out from education. I just sort of, like we do. And the other one was I found I just had this feeling that I might have got a bit frustrated watching it. Now, I've heard good reports from it.
Can I throw that to you? Because I feel a little bit the same way. Why do you think, as a teacher, the program would frustrate you?
I think it's, and this is what I want to talk about in greater detail in this topic, I think it might have been that some of the things that, and very valid things, but some of the achievements, in inverted commas, that they that the producers would have shown us.
Mm. Cherry-picked.
Yes, may have made me feel a bit sort of disenchanted if it was something that I know that myself and yourself and a lot of other people I know who work in the profession, schools are doing and working really hard to do.
Yep.
Now, I'm not saying that they did the right, that they didn't do the right thing, Berwick. I mean, fantastic. It's great to hear that a school like that's become like that. But I just thought I might have got a bit sort of frustrated. And I wanted to say to you, Adam, like, could any school that have done this, could you put a bunch of cameras in a school who are doing this, and would that make enrolments go up? Now, I'm sure the school has improved. I'm not doubting that. But I just wonder whether the fact that it's hit television, just like anything,
yep,
that we all get a bit excited and go, I want to go there, or, you know, just like when you're watching an ad.
So it's almost
you
like
see a celebrity doing
it's,
something.
It's almost like a celebrity school. I want to be involved in that. But, I mean, as we've said, more power to them. I mean, to turn themselves around is fantastic. But, of course, people are now going to see that and go, well, I ignored that school before, but, gee, they're doing well. I want my kids to go there and that sort of stuff. When they were actually those ones who ignored it before, probably part of the problem, you know, going, oh, I'm going to ignore that school. I'm not going to be part of the solution there. I'm not going to send my kids there and get involved and do these things to be part of the solution. I'm going to leave it up to other people to do it, and then I'm going to come in on the fumes of that and enjoy all that sort of stuff. What I do want to say about the program too that really upset me, and they talked about how wonderful all the programs were that they were doing, they were great. I tell you what, all schools could come up with some wonderful programs if they had 6 university professors. I think it was 6. It was something up there in the school working with them all the time. And they had all these pros and specialists in there, and they had them all doing all these things. Great stuff. I tell you what, every school would improve and do all these things if we had those sorts of people within them. And it kind of annoyed me because people are going, how wonderful is this? And it is wonderful. But gee, when you have a look at it and all the support they got, You know,
was that something that came from the TV network originally, who got the uni involved, or was it the school that reached out to Melbourne? It was Melbourne. It was the University of Melbourne who had experts involved. Do we know? I just want to clarify that.
Well, because it says there, the University of Melbourne experts came to the rescue in 2015 and turned it around. Now, the Prin's been there for 8 years. So he said the process began 8 years earlier. Now, to be perfectly frank, the process obviously wasn't going very well if they had to reach out to these experts to, and I quote, came to the rescue. So obviously things hadn't been working and they've gone and done that. Now there's not...
That's the writer who's using those words, so we've got to be careful that they're not...
True, very. And that's why I put in quote. I wasn't trying to say that that's come from the principal. But, you know, it's...
What I want to touch on, which is linked to, just to take the conversation in a slightly different direction about it, is, and I'd love... if Mel Cashin, if you're listening, if you're able to somehow share a couple of things you talked about in your Spark Talk, you were talking about, Mel was talking about the things that we do as teachers that sometimes put our profession in the eyes of others back a step.
Okay.
And that sometimes, she even mentioned, I wish I could remember some of them, but you know how sometimes people share memes online about teachers making jokes about when they're going to have a wine or, you know, something about, you know, a classic one is, you know, the picture of an adult walking out of a school with a big smile on their face, with a child behind them saying bye. And then the quote from the teacher is, I don't know who you are because it's Friday afternoon. Those kind of jokes, like teachers, we don't do that.
No, of course we don't.
And Mel was suggesting that there's a lot of that stuff that we do as teachers that don't make us look good in the eye. I guess what I'm saying with this is that this show paints a certain picture, and I think a lot of it was good from what I could gather, but does it do so well for all of us working in other schools who are working our backsides off for the right reasons? Because not everyone in the public are seeing what we're doing that way.
What you're trying to say is that maybe parents coming through, what this school's doing is going to be the expectation and what they feel is the norm for every school? Is that what you're trying to say? And that places too high expectations. They're going to actually go to a lovely school and go, well, I saw on the TV with this other school that they were doing this, this, and this. How come you're not doing it? And they go, well, we didn't have those resources. We weren't given the opportunity to have these experts and all these things. And then, well, I'm not going there. I'm going to go somewhere else.
Maybe. I just get worried when real life... I love watching documentaries, Adam. But I get worried when real life workplaces and things that are kind of put and produced into a reality kind of show. It becomes TV and it's edited. Exactly what you just said. It worries me that the perception is going to be, because we do it a lot when we watch TV. You put that perception across everything else that you see and do. So it's an interesting question. Hopefully you've understood, our listeners have understood what I'm trying to get at. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on Revolution School, if you watched it and if you've got any.
Righto, mate. Third article for tonight. Now, I must admit, over the years as a teacher, you see a lot of these types of articles about, and this one's entitled, The School the World Needs to Know About. Now, we hear all the time about schools doing things differently and trying different things and how wonderful this is and how wonderful that is. And look, schools do a lot of that stuff really, really well. But what really drew me to this article was the idea behind what we're doing to our students now and how we need to improve the way that we teach them. Now, some things came up across, you know, across America, and I know I do go to America a little bit, mate, and I do apologise for that to our listeners. I love reading things about America because they do things so differently. But some of the things to come out of the a survey of some of the top schools about their students and their belief that they just don't have any interest in learning anymore, and that we're becoming so data driven and test driven. Now, some of the things that came up was that some of the trends were that students felt incredibly under pressure to perform. They do huge amounts of homework. Due to the enormous effort they put in, they remember almost nothing of what they learned. Now, I could even come back to that one and go, I crammed so much and did that stuff even in VCE that I did year 12 French. I can say bonjour, au revoir, adieu, je m'appelle Adam, and la vache. I know that la vache is cow, and la foc. Now, that's not a lie. La foc, L-A-P-H-O-Q-U-E, is a seal.
Thank you.
There you go. But that's a seal. It really is. But I don't remember things. But the big one that came up for me too was that their enthusiasm for learning and their enthusiasm for wanting to know more and to take it further had almost completely disappeared. And for me as a teacher...
This is in the top performing schools.
Yeah, this is in the top performing schools. I, as a teacher and someone who, I love fostering that thing of learning and kids who want to ask questions. And that, you know, those kids who, you do a topic and they ask questions, and then the next day they come in and go, Miss Labarge, Miss Labarge, oh, I went home and I looked up this and I found out about this, and the parents look at you and go, oh, they dragged me to the computer last night, an hour and a half we were on there. But that's what you want to foster. And to see that these top schools, that enthusiasm for learning has almost completely disappeared, that's a worry, Rick, isn't it? It really is.
Well, it is, particularly for these schools in America. I think this is mainly secondary, from what I gathered from the post, from the blog post. It comes back to the drive, which comes from above for a lot of schools, comes from the department, and for achievement, for numbers, doesn't it?
It really does, yeah.
And I know there was a lot of talk at DigiCon last week, in some of the conversations that I overheard about the amount of content having to get through once students hit high school, and and that balance between following passions and things they're interested in and stuff that they just have to get in their heads come VCE.
It makes it really hard because, like you said, there's so much pressure, and I think the pressure comes from parents. There was huge amounts of pressure on them to achieve this huge score, and it eats away at them, and they feel like there's so much stuff, and they cram it in, and then they kind of finish, and they let it out, and kind of 95% of the information disappears, and never to be seen from again, and they lose that enthusiasm for wanting to know more, and I think it's really disappointing sometimes.
Well, the writer of this article mentions that one of the after the research he's done with these schools, that the key, his key to success of creating a great school is really based on the combination of content and method. So he's saying that if the content is selected that is that proper knowledge, essential knowledge that humans need to flourish, and that's his word, and if they're taught in the right sequence, then students will get a truly independent understanding. But I don't think that kind of says much about method so much, about how they get to that understanding. And I think student voice is, I know something that our school has been talking a bit about late this week, is that student voice helps with engagement. I don't think there's any arguments about that. And that includes the way that kids having a chance at, and this is even for young kids, having a chance at being able to say, I didn't quite get that. I don't understand how that's being taught.
Yep.
Can I try and learn it this way, or can you explain it to me in this way? Having a say.
Because we want our kids to be not only lifelong learners, but we want them to question. We want them to challenge. We want them to do so many of those things, because that's what we do when we get older. We want them to go, nah, I'm not comfortable with that. I want to learn it this way. I want to do it that way. So it's open-ended tasks and giving them that freedom, like you said, to have that voice almost in their learning, to get it to push them a little bit further.
We'll share this article on the, it's a blog post. We'll share that on the blog and on our blog. And I don't like the term great schools so much and bad schools. And I'd like to hear your thoughts, our listeners' thoughts on whether you think that's even worth using that term great schools. I think it's quite a strange term that I don't think we should probably say all that too much, all too much. All right, Adam, I believe it's your first anecdote for Term 3. Over to you.
It is my first anecdote, and I want you to cast your mind back to your primary school days. And I actually feel like our anecdotes recently, we've been able to reflect a lot on our own time in primary school, which
try to.
Well, we try to.
Through the haze.
But, when you ever tried to chuck a sickie, I want you to think about when you ever tried to chuck a sickie, did your parents put the hard word on you? So, you get up in the morning and, you are feeling a little bit under the weather, but... Yeah, mum, I'm feeling a bit sick. Or your dad. Did they put the hard word on you? Now, where I want to go with this is my parents used to say to me, well, Adam, if you're going to be sick and stay home, you can't go to football training tonight. Now, that would be your do or die, and that would be, I'm not actually that sick here, all right, I'll go to school. But it was also that one of, if you actually said to your parents, I can't go, and that's what, they would actually then perk up and go, okay, maybe this is legit. Maybe he's actually not feeling well and you might get the day off school. Did your parents do anything like that with you if you ever went out and said, look, I'm feeling sick? Did they ever kind of give you almost a test, I guess? Somewhere with this.
I've been sitting here thinking since you started the conversation. I know that Mum listens to the podcast every now and then, so she might be able to get in contact with me after this episode and tell me, because I struggle to remember what they used to say when I would maybe... I look, like, to be honest, I was a bit of a goody two-shoes. I didn't really pull the sickie that much.
I'm not surprised.
What I did do was if I'd come off a really bad flu or cold, and I had genuine, I've been to the doctor, and I'd had days off as a student, I used to milk the absolute, I used to milk that to the end. Yeah. Like even like on a day when I probably was ready to go back, I'd just have that one last day to get right.
Because that
and dad were pretty good about that, or mum particularly was, you know, Dad was already at work by then.
Because that day's the best one, because you are feeling better. It's kind of like a bonus day, because you're not lying on the couch all fluey and things like that.
But I used to always lose a bit of confidence too. It's going to sound, well, that's how I describe it. I used to get a bit, like if you had 3 or 4 days off in a row, you'd kind of get a bit, I'd get a bit anxious about going back too. So I think the more you put it off, you're kind of like avoiding
it. What have I missed? Are my mates doing something different? We were playing football on Monday, or they changed to Friday and that sort of stuff. But where I want to go with this, I know that recently I've seen current students who have you got the ones where there's siblings at school, right? So there might be two or three of them that you can see the two siblings there, but one of them's not at school, and you might see the other siblings in the yard and go, oh, have you seen such and such, how are they going? They're sick today and they're at home, and okay, no worries. And then it gets to sort of 3:15 at the end of the day, and you see the parents turn up, there's the sibling looking right as rain.
In nice warm casual clothes.
Warm casual clothes. In off winter. They go to the playground, they're running around and smiling, and then recently I saw someone, I went out to talk to him, off they were going to football training that night and all these other things, and you're thinking, now hold on, if you're sick, why aren't you at home or sitting in the car feeling sorry for yourself, resting up? Now off they go to football training. Now, what's happened?
Sometimes if you walk past them in the yard afterwards, you know, I've actually said, you look all right. Why have you been away today? And that kind of, you know.
And they give you that guilty grin. That guilty sort of, I wasn't feeling all that well today. But I'm just going to go and play on the playground. And off they go, and off they run off. And the parents kind of give you that sort of, that not grimace, but they kind of look at you and go, yes, I know he wasn't really that sick, but a day off's not going to hurt him. And I agree. It's those kids that don't normally have a day off. You can't begrudge them one. I mean, everyone has one. But
look, not enough students have days off when they're sick in my book at the moment. And particularly at this time of year, I've got so many kids coughing and sputtering.
Yeah.
I just feel like just opening the door and just... And stay out.
Yeah, and say exactly
what you want. Until you're better.
Yeah, so because, and then they come and read to you and there's snot everywhere and it's horrible. But we're going to finish it there, because the sick days, I want to talk to our listeners and say, think back to when you were a kid. Did your parents put the hard word in you? Did they say, well, if you're going to stay home, we've got this disgusting date and kiwi fruit medicine that you're going to have to guzzle, that you look at and you go, oh, I don't want to borrow that. You know, did they test you out? Did they have this method of, well, if you're going to stay home, this is what you're going to do, and it was awful, that would find you out. If you didn't want to borrow that, you go, no, I'll just go to school. Yeah. Or if you were legitimately sick, you go, I don't give a stuff.
I'd love to hear that. I'm
sure our listeners have got plenty of stories.
I'm sitting here thinking, gee, I just had really nice parents tonight, because I can't remember.
So if Rick's mum wants to call in with some of those, we might go over those next week. So, but if you do have any, we'd love to hear from you. So, mate, that brings an end to episode 62. And we did want to say, we don't have much to say in the outro tonight to finish up, but we do want to say that we've mentioned a lot, the anecdote episode. It's still sitting there. It's almost been like sitting in the oven, slowly rising. Just, we want it golden brown. We want it ready to go. But we think in a fortnight's time, in week 5, will be the time that we do that episode.
It's made me hungry, that analogy, Adam, because we do record in the evening, our podcast. Yeah, so we're going to aim for week 5. And we may have a little hiatus only for a week after that. We're not sure yet, and then come back. So again, this is your last call. If you've got an anecdote, please send it to us. We've got some great ones that we're going to share from some of our listeners. We've had someone send in some audio, which is great. So we'll have kind of like a special guest on in that episode. Please keep them coming. There's nothing that we won't talk about, Adam, is there?
Well,
I think people should know that by now.
There's nothing we won't talk about. I wouldn't go that far. What if it's a controversial topic?
Well, we aren't afraid.
We aren't afraid. Okay, fair enough. So if you've got an extremely controversial topic, then email Rick and he can talk about it. So from me, Adam Lavaz.
Me, Rick Kayla Thompson, and we've both been two regular teachers.